Hello, this is Mitch Dunford with the National Alliance, and today we're doing a special podcast. The title is Program Business, The Basics, and I have on the call with me Richard Kerr, who is chairman and CEO of Market Scout. Many of you know Richard and know of Market Scout. Richard's been in the business many years, been very successful in many aspects of the insurance industry. Richard, thanks for joining us. And Joanne Clark, who's one of our senior academic directors with the National Alliance, has been in the insurance business many years herself. Welcome, Joanne.
Thank you, Mitch.
Richard, tell us a little bit about your background in insurance and how you got started, and just a real quick bio, and then Joanne, I'll ask you, just so that our audience is familiar with both of you.
Okay, so I started in the insurance business immediately after getting out of UT Austin, where good old Dr. Hold was one of my college professors. Went into the retail business and then migrated from there into Marsh and on down the road becoming chairman of a UK holding company that established operations in the US. In that capacity, we built MGAs, programs, TPAs, did a lot of different things, and then ultimately came to form Market Scout. And Market Scout now is an electronic insurance exchange connecting retail agents across the country with specialty market access.
Many people out there are familiar with your market barometer, which you launched. How long ago was that?
The market barometer has been going for 12 years. And it is both a macro and micro view of the industry and rating and pricing as we know it. So we give a barometer indicator for all lines of coverage, both from a commercial standpoint and personal. Then we break it down between industry group, and we break it down further by the size of the account. And then also by coverages, individual coverages themselves.
It's been interesting to watch that barometer go up and down over the years. Where'd you get the idea for that?
We actually got the idea because we wanted to provide additional services to our retail agent network.
And okay.
One of the things that's always a challenge for these folks is they walk into an insured's office and the rate's up 10% or down 3%. And, of course, the client always wants the rate to be down.
Right.
The market barometer is a good third-party reference to what the market is doing across the nation, and it's used many times by retailers to affirm their position. For instance, if you're quoting a renewal on an apartment project and the price is up 3%, the insured may complain about that, but if the industry average is up 5%, it gives somewhat of a validation that the agent's doing their job.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Richard. Joanne, how about you? Tell us about your background.
I started in insurance in 1974 and fell into it when I was needed to go to a local community college just to grab an English credit so I could graduate a little early from high school, and tried to get into the legal secretary program as I really wanted to be the first attorney in the family. And there weren't any openings, and they sent me down the hallway to the insurance secretary program, and where I intended to go for 8 weeks, I ended up completing the program. I fell in love with insurance. And reading the 165 lines of the New York Standard Fire Policy and reading contracts, to this day, to me, that's just brings great pleasure. A new policy comes out and it's time to go on vacation because I have my reading material. But started in an agency, have spent some time on the company side, was a regulator, and for the last number of years have done a lot of work with the National Alliance, and for the last 5 years for the National Alliance with some responsibilities in personal lines. So insurance has been a great industry for me.
You're one of those people that reads policies for fun, right?
I am. I have a title, a self-imposed title. I'm a forensic formologist.
Oh, my gosh. So. That's awesome. So. Well, Joanne, let me kind of turn this over to you at this point to start this discussion with Richard about program business and how, you know, agencies can start to incorporate that model into their own.
Great. Thanks, Mitch. Richard, it's nice to have this time to chat with you and in this informal setting and learn about your experience and expertise in program business. But, you know, before we get too far along, can you provide our listeners with a Cliff Notes definition of what we mean when we talk program business?
Sure, Joanne. So program business is any assimilation of common class codes, industry groups, or coverages. So as an example, you could do a program on tree trimmers as an industry group, or perhaps you would do a more of a specific coverage, which would maybe be directors and officers liability for public institutions.
Well, we're going to talk more about that as we go through our time together this afternoon. You know, I mentioned earlier I entered the insurance industry in 1974, which I'm sure sounds pretty ancient to some of our listeners. And in thinking about it, that really was the last century, and that would be you too, Richard, along with me. And since
hey,
then,
hey. Yeah,
we know our industry has changed. And I remember the days when updated technology meant that you got a new font ball for your IBM Selectric typewriter. And some of you may need to Google font ball to really know how far technology has come, right? But along with that change has been a real change because there's been such growth in the areas of specialization by both personal and commercial insurance professionals. And Richard, can you expand on how that specialization and growth in specialization affects program business?
I can, Joanne. And I think that the interaction we're having here is going to be really healthy because you're on the left side of the pendulum and I'm over on the right. I'm about to take a beach vacation and I can guarantee you there won't be any 165 line policy in my briefcase. There'll be some reading material and it'll be in magazine form, but it's not going to be a insurance policy. So a lot of what we do is, and one of the things that I'm hoping we're going to be able to convey in the course of this podcast series is to send a message to the underwriters, the program managers, or the internal staff at various retail agents to help teach them about a new way to generate additional revenues and income streams. And that does go towards specialization. We all need to start becoming more focused on specialization. And I think that's heading where you want to go, but let me kick it back to you and you guide us as to what you feel we should cover in this first series.
Okay, great. So we talked about program business briefly and that specialization in both personal and commercial insurance. So can you share a time, an experience, Richard, that you might have had when maybe someone came to you with an area of specialization for program business? It seemed like a great idea, but it didn't have the results that you were expecting, that you found when all was said and done that, as they say, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze and all the effort that was put into it?
I mean, that happens a lot. And, you know, it's all about the people and their technical expertise. And many times we've passed on getting involved in programs because we didn't feel like that the underwriting expertise was in place. So that has happened to us before where we've passed on it and things turned out to be successful. It's happened more than once. So I don't have a specific example for you, but the real key for making these things a success is underwriting integrity, distribution, and the ability to turn a profit for your underwriting company partner.
Just briefly, you know, you talk about turning a profit. So you have this great idea, you create and work with the agent or the broker to put together the program business, and a year or two or 3 years later, the loss ratio has just gone to heck in a handbasket. What is the expectation, Richard, of turning a profit? Is that a first year that you're looking for? Is it a 5-year turnaround?
You know, if your underwriting results go south in the first couple of years, everybody loses because the agency and or the program manager that puts the program together is not going to turn a profit probably for the first 24 months. There's a lot of R&D and startup expense in there. And certainly the insurance company needs to turn a profit as well. And they like to put money in the bank, so to speak. So if in the first couple of years, you're even close to a break even, that's not a good situation for them because they always like to sock away some underwriting profits for that time whenever a loss does occur. And there will be years that aren't bad, but overall, the trend needs to be in the right direction. So sometimes you can have the best intentions and start a program and just frankly catch some bad luck. And if you get bad luck coming out of the gate and get popped with some large losses in the first year or 18 months, the program's probably going to be in trouble, probably won't survive, and everybody's going to lose money.
Well, we hope that doesn't happen too often, right?
You know, you hope not, but it does happen. It's most of these programs, and that's the thing about the program business, is there's always one on the street and they're always moving. And there's usually a reason behind that. It's either that the carrier changed its appetite or there's a problem with the program itself. So it's a pretty dynamic field, and that's the reason you've got to get your ducks in a row going in, because you want this to be at least a 5, 6, 7 year relationship with any given insurance company. You'll have to move eventually, just for various reasons, but you don't want to be moving frequently, because that's not good for you or anyone else.
That's expensive, isn't it, to move a book of business like that. Richard, how does coverage by industry, we're talking about specialization, whether it's oil and gas or tree trimmers or chiropractors, whatever it is, how does the coverage by industry differ from writing just everyday business?
So the difference is you would have a common group of business. Let's take chiropractors as an example. And then you would need to have that technical expertise that you bring to bear and the underwriting skills related to that book. So it's homogenous, it's all common in practice, and it's something you and the underwriting company can really get your hands around. Because if you know chiropractors, you know, for instance, what looks right, smells right, and what the underwriting criteria you should look for. You can't be an expert at everything. And that's the reason technical specialty is so important. So if you're a retail operation and you're an expert in oil and gas and you have $5 million of business that you feel like you could place with one individual carrier, that's the type of people that should come together and say, look, we ought to do a program and get started with it. And we just need some help getting off the ground. That's more or less what we're talking about here during these podcasts, is how to help a retail agent determine, number one, do I have something that's worth doing a program? Two, if so, what are the first steps? And then three, I need a complete roadmap to know what I need, what skills I don't have, and how I get to the end result, which is a viable program competitive with the market that can deliver my underwriting partners a profit. If you can walk down that path and put it together, it will greatly benefit the retailer, because he becomes a program manager and probably picks up as much as 7 to 10% more commission.
Well, I know we'll get more into actually setting up a program as we move forward with some of our future podcasts. But I think one of the things that you hit on as well is, you know, it's having the underwriting, it's having the book of business, it's having the skills, it's knowing that industry. And I would imagine it would be pretty important too to partner with a company that's going to be able to provide the coverages that are needed by that type of business, that specialty business. I remember a carrier that came out a number of years ago with a program, and you know, going out and talking to agents and really excited about it. And it was gas stations and mechanical shops and so forth, auto body. But yet there was no coverage for underground storage tanks. So it's like, here was this great program allegedly developed, but didn't have the coverages. So you'll be talking more about that. As we move forward to the importance of matching that as well. So
you bet. And this is a new field for retail agents to get into the program business. And it hasn't been done in the past, because frankly, those that do programs, for example, Market Scout and others, have largely wanted to keep that to themselves. And the retail agent would come to some sort of a program manager, they put the program together. What we're starting to see, and what we are hoping to assist CICs with, is doing that themselves, because it can be done. There's just a roadmap that needs to be followed. So that's what's going to be really interesting. And Joanne, as you know, the industry is changing, distribution's changing, everything is changing. So we all have to be nimble and quick. And this is one of the many ways that things are starting to change.
Well, it sounds like you're planning on being the OnStar for retail agents on how to get to program business. In your experience, Richard, are agents and brokers, agencies coming up with the idea for program business and then approaching carriers, or is the reverse more common?
Normally, it comes from the distribution source. So what we believe is that of the retail agents that are out there, there may not be every third agent that has $5 or $10 million of homogenous business to put into a program. However, there may be four agents that have $10 million, and they may cluster or group together to do a program collectively. So that can be a very viable alternative. At the end of the day, what is taking place is the insurance underwriters are wanting to get closer to the administrator and closer to the business because they feel like that enables them to get a better view of the risk and write the better business. So one of the ways to get closer is to have a more direct relationship with the retail agent.
So there are a couple of approaches for writing program business, correct? So the agency could create one in-house, or the other option would be to build a program through an MGA or wholesaler like Market Scout. So can we talk for just a minute, just giving us again just a real basic approach to if an agency broker was interested in creating that in-house program. You've mentioned the word underwriter on more than one occasion. So would they have to have their own underwriting staff at the agency, or would they still be relying on an underwriter at a carrier?
You would have to have your own. If you're going to be a program manager, you got to have your own underwriter. So this is the dilemma with many, many agencies. They don't have the quote underwriting skill in-house. You may have a group of producers who are extremely talented at doing chiropractors. However, they've never worked at an insurance company and they don't have those basic underwriting skills. So you would need to bring in someone from the outside to be that underwriter. And also, the insurance companies are very leery of the fact that, you know, insurance producers have never met a risk they didn't like. You know, traditionally as a producer, it's your job to get it placed. They love every risk that comes through the door is a beautiful risk because they get paid on commission. They don't get paid on underwriting profit. So to be successful, you have to bring in this underwriter and instill those type of underwriting checks and balances inside your agency. And if you don't, you're not going to get the pen from a carrier to underwrite a program.
So a couple of things come up. Is it easier then to take someone with underwriting experience and teach them about the industry as opposed to taking somebody with industry experience and teaching them underwriting?
You would need to take you can't take somebody with industry experience that's been on the retail side and say tomorrow you're going to be an underwriter. I mean, it probably has been done, but if I'm the insurance company, I'm going to be very cautious with that approach. You'll be more successful if you have the $10 million or $5 million of chiropractors. Go find an insurance company that has a chiropractor underwriter, bring him into your agency, and then implement his skill sets along with the current distribution you have.
So you mentioned the word giving the underwriter the pen. There may be some of our listeners that may not know what you mean by that. So what does it mean when somebody has the pen?
So, you know, that phrase is maybe a misnomer in some instances, but generally speaking, having the pen means you have underwriting authority. You have been vested by the insurance company with the authority to make decisions on their behalf. Now, normally it's within certain parameters. For instance, you can do a building up to $5 million, but not beyond that. And you can do $20 million of them on the coast, but no more than that. And those checks and balances are put in place by the insurance company. But if you're within those parameters, or we might say within that underwriting box, then you have the authority to select the risk and price it appropriately. normally that pricing has a debit or a credit that you can apply. So if the price was $100, you can make the decision whether to charge $110 or maybe charge only $85 by giving it a credit. So that's normally what takes place with a program manager. They have certain parameters, an underwriting box in which they can operate. And if they get outside that box and maybe want to do a $7 million building, they would then need to go back to the insurance company and get a sign off because that $7 million is above their $5 million underwriting box.
So in other words, they have the ability to really put the company on the hook for some risks. And so the company's pretty selective in who they're going to hand the pen to.
You bet. And they're going to want to see those checks and balances, and they will come in and do a deep dive, not only on the individual underwriter, but the agency itself, their financials, their background, the history of the firm, things of that nature. And for instance, if it were a retail agent that seems to change markets constantly with whatever book it is, and they're, as we might call, go burning through markets constantly, that's not going to be a good fit. That's not what they're looking for.
Why don't we, let me ask you a couple more questions about the in-house, and then that'll give us a great segue into talking about building through MGAs and wholesalers in our next podcast together. Richard, how do insurance agencies, how do they find the carriers for program business?
Well, it's pretty easy, actually. I mean, there's a number of, one way you could do is you can go to an MGA or a wholesale broker that forms programs, and they certainly can help you source through those carriers. And there's also, industry events that you can attend where these insurance companies attend looking for programs. So effectively, many carriers like this program market, and they're always out looking for a great new deal. Presently, they seem to be seeing the same kind of things from the same kind of people. In other words, they're seeing program opportunities from, Market Scout, Amwin, CRC, RPS, all the rest of us. And they like to see something new and different coming from a different field. So that's why I think that a program manager being installed inside of a retail agent would create some interest and have a very high possibility for success.
Thank you. So one last question on in-house, and I've heard the term aggregating premium when you're creating those in-house programs. Could you explain to our listeners what is meant by aggregating premium? What does that involve?
Well, again, it's making reference to the homogeneous premium that you want to aggregate. So back to the tree trimmer analogy, if you have 40 tree trimmers with 7 different markets, the intent with a program would be to take all 40 of those, aggregate them, put them into your new program market, and give a greater spread of risk, a larger premium volume, so that the program can sustain losses and be viable for the long term.
Okay. Well, I think that is sets the foundation. Yeah. Mitch, I'm going to hand it back to you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, both of you. Richard, appreciate that. Richard, are you really going on vacation to the beach?
I am literally leaving at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, catching a flight, going through Miami, and then heading down to Nevis.
Well, I'll email you an insurance policy you can read while you're there on the beach.
Yeah, I'll be thinking of Joanne.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both. And to our audience, stay tuned for the next episode. We'll start to explore in more detail how an agency that's interested in and maybe able to make this transition into program business can start doing so. So thank you both for your participation. We look forward to the next podcast.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.